Hello, and welcome to 100% Real with Ruby. Today, I have Kenny on the list. Kenny.
Thanks, Ruby.
Kenny and Sarah back for the fourth episode on this podcast that we've actually done together, because as soon as we start talking, we just go into a crazy amount of just awesome stuff that everyone can relate to and has struggled with at some point, because we just get it. And we've worked with so many people towards so many different goals. And because they are just like me and we actually give a shit about people getting results that last, we go deep with our goals. And the mindsets are probably one of the biggest things that hold a lot of people back from getting results that last, from working through limiting beliefs, from breaking bad habits, which Sarah literally just put up a post on how where you are right now is a product of your long-term habits and lifestyle choices. And accepting that puts you back in the driver's seat. So with that, we're going to introduce this podcast with a little talkings on mindset and exactly how to break past these limiting beliefs and become aware of them.
Yes, thank you so much for having us back. We're so excited to be here.
Thank you, Ruby. You know, it's funny. Someone actually called me Jenny today. So Lenny is like the second one. So it's all good.
At least it was just like the first last name transposed. So it's totally fine.
Yeah. I guess my, you know, I, yeah, it's all good.
But yeah, I definitely want to talk about like the post that I had made today. And it's funny, we were just actually talking about this on another podcast as well. And kind of just like looking back on my own journey, you know, even as a coach, right? So we'll talk about, I think talking about the clients that are successful in this journey and the characteristics that they kind of hold, but also understanding just like your background. So I was talking about this again, like on another podcast the other day, and I have been going through a hormonal healing journey over the last 2 years. This is the first time that I'm attempting the fat loss phase in 2 years. And you know, I got to a point where my body wasn't responding to anything. Nothing that I did in the gym, no amount of cardio, no amount of dieting, my body was unresponsive. And it had taken a culmination of 10 plus years. So over a decade to get to that point. And I lived in high stress. I had an extremely high stress job. I was training to the utmost intensity and utmost failure all the time, never implementing deloads, never implementing any sort of breaks. I was dieting in between that, and then not being properly reversed. And because of that, it led me to essentially the hormonal imbalance from hell, where I had to do a lot of crazy things to get out of that. And I think a lot of, you know, even just like speaking from a weight loss perspective, you know, if you get to a point where you've been putting on weight and you're having a hard time losing it, you know, those things didn't happen overnight. It didn't happen overnight. It happened a culmination of all of your habits over several years, not even weeks, but several years, and getting to that point of feeling like anything you do isn't working, or the things that used to work for you are no longer working. And that happens for a reason, because you're getting to a point where your body is just not, you're trying to take from a body that can no longer give to you. And I think a lot of that has to do with just constantly looking for quick results and trying to get to an end result as quickly as you possibly can, and always chasing more. And it definitely, you know, dials back to just instant gratification, which I think is a huge issue, especially with, you know, the rise of social media. I think has definitely added to that instant gratification that a lot of people are looking for, but ends up setting them back further when they're chasing that.
I want to quickly add something to that. Kenny will be able to easily go off. I shared this post that I saw in the inner circle, not the inner circle, with one of the female groups on Facebook with the co-coach therapist that I have. And it was one of a girl sharing her ab photos, but no one was really reading the actual caption that came with it, which was something to do with the fact that she keeps promising herself that she's going to try to eat clean and try to eat all the vegetables, but she keeps binging on these Oreos. And it's just like, people are in the comments saying goals, goal body. Oh, you have abs. It shouldn't matter anyway. But no one is actually, like, no one's seeing what is actually being put there in the comments. Like, it looks innocent, but it's not innocent. Oh, it doesn't matter anyway if you got abs to show for it. Like, abs don't equal healthy. Abs don't equal success. I'll let you take that one.
Yeah, I mean, that's wild. That's a great social experiment, because you're right. Aesthetics don't necessarily, like, physical aesthetics don't necessarily equate to internal health, right? And I think going off what Sarah had mentioned with the immediate gratification, if you look at the different, especially like the marketing tactics with, I would say, mainstream fitness, a lot of it's geared towards weight loss, very fast weight loss, and making the scale a primary tool for determining whether you're succeeding or not. And, you know, the scale, it's an interesting thing, because it can be used as a data tool, like for just tracking how you're doing overall. But I mean, I remember when I was in college, and this is when my fitness journey started, I used to really focus on the aesthetic goals as well, getting abs, getting, you know, bigger chest, and also looking at the scale to get leaner, because I thought, oh, if the scale goes down, I'll get leaner. That's how it works. So calories in versus calories out, got to make sure I'm eating less calories and just get smaller and leaner, whatever. But it is something where I think it's a major issue, where people do equate a certain physical outcome with having also longevity, because health is one of those things where it can go both ways, where the physical is really emphasized very heavily, but the internal is not emphasized at all. But the irony is that internal health will typically lead to external results. And if you're just focusing on the external and doing extreme things, that can stress your body out. Like Sarah had mentioned, it took her about 10 years of cumulative stress to finally have her body stop responding. You know, part of that stress, it, for some people, may be the way they diet, the way they exercise. And those things are often viewed as a positive, right? Like, you go to the gym, it's a positive thing. You move around, it's a positive thing. You eat healthy, it's a positive thing. But typically, it's at a surface level understanding of what it really means to do those things. Because you can eat very healthy, but if you're eating at a caloric level that doesn't support basic hormonal function, then it's not healthy. And if you go to the gym, you know, 6 to 7 days per week, and you're just absolutely killing yourself, and it feels good at the moment, but you're not allowing yourself to recover at a very optimal level, then that's not healthy as well. And so I think there is this unfortunate misunderstanding that by doing certain things, they automatically can get results, but it's a much deeper context to it. It's about having a balance with your life and a balance between what you enjoy and also doing things that do make you healthier, but not taking those things to such a far extreme where you do believe the more you put in, the more you get out of it. We have to talk about what exactly are you doing to put more in, because if you're doing steps that are not actually conducive to your results, even though they may be in the gym, they may be regarding a diet, then you may inadvertently be sabotaging yourself, because the intent and the intensity of what you're doing, these things really do matter. And it's not always black and white with doing one thing and getting something out of it. It could actually end up backfiring on you, which it did. For both Sarah and I, like, for me, I ended up with a gut issue because I was doing basically a bulk, and the bulk went wrong. I wanted to eat more food, get bigger, get stronger. And at some point, I was also training to very heavy failure. And those things combined basically overstressed my body out. And it backfired. And it wasn't more is better. It's finding what is sustainable. Like sustainable is often better. But yeah, I think the aesthetic results is something that is definitely overemphasized as important. And it really isn't that important. Because what's more important, in my opinion, now going through some serious health issues is your internal health, and the physical results will follow.
That's something that a lot of people think about until it's too late, like the internal health. And then it's like they have to undo everything and take steps backwards in order to move forwards. It's almost like when people keep pushing a diet phase beyond its welcome, and then they end up going on some binge fest or overeating all the time or finding it way too hard. Like I'm sure you guys came across as well, but like in my past, I got to a stage where I couldn't even put food on the scale without having some panic attack because of how far I took my dieting phase. Like you will have diet fatigue. That is what causes the biggest weight loss resistance. Your diet fatigue, because then you can't put in the effort anymore. Your motivation isn't going to be there anymore. And going off what you said with like what they see on social media, a lot of the time you see people saying, this is my 8-week progress. This is my 12-week progress. And people only go off that face value. Oh, how did you do this? I want this. Who's your trainer? What program are you doing? What's your diet like? People are always asking these questions to find out what are people doing, but it's like, they are not you. They don't have the same history as you. What they did to get to where they were is completely different from what you did to get to where you are now and where you're stuck. And what does it matter what they achieved in that 8 weeks, 12 weeks, if in 12 months' time they're back to where they started or worse, or if what they did to get to that endpoint is unsustainable, unrealistic, their children were put onto eBay, their family was put onto Gumtree, and they couldn't even maintain like a steady workflow. Like there's that incongruence there, you know, ambiguity, incongruence.
Yeah. I kind of want to go back to the photo that you had mentioned with the girl showing her abs, but then talking about how she can't stop binging cookies and stuff like that, right? And I just want to kind of emphasize, and this is something that, as you were saying that, I was like, you know, we had a client who came to us, she had estrogen dominance, like really, really bad. And she was taking painkillers because her periods were getting so bad, not even Motrin, but actual painkillers. And she couldn't function. She couldn't get out of bed because of how bad those things were. And she was having weight loss resistance because of it, obviously, right? With estrogen dominance oftentimes comes with weight loss resistance. And we finally had solved the issue of the estrogen dominance. We were able to get her levels back down to a good optimal range, and she no longer needed the pain pills. But one thing that really stood out to us was that she said, I might not be my leanest, but I'm definitely my happiest and my freest. And it's important to remember that your leanest isn't necessarily going to be your healthiest. It's not going to be your happiest, and it's definitely not going to be your freest. And I think people equate leanness to this like pinnacle of ultimate health, when honestly it might, like, you know, everybody's genetically, it's different. Everybody's body will look different when they're at a certain weight, but at the end of the day, like, your leanest might not be your healthiest or your happiest. And I think that's something to take home and kind of remember, that, you know, building a lifestyle that's sustainable and being healthy and being happy with your body isn't necessarily going to be having visible abs. But I think the sooner people kind of realize that, the freer they're able to become and actually live healthier and more, you know, having more longevity in their life.
Yeah, I was gonna say there's even a lot of pain points that are pretty heavily emphasized in marketing as well, where going back to like the leanness, you know, it's an immediate physical thing that you're able to kind of see for yourself, right? But I think there's a massive misunderstanding with what actually is going to lead to those things, and also allow you to keep them, right? Like Sarah said, your leanest is not going to be your freest, nor is it going to be, or I should say, your leanest most likely will not be your freest, or also most likely will not be your happiest. But it's funny. I was telling our friend Kara yesterday that there's a bit of an irony with what we do, because, you know, Sarah and I, we consider ourselves functional health coaches, right? And the fact that we have to use those words to describe ourselves as a functional health coach is very ironic to me, because it should be just a given that you as a coach are prioritizing your client's health. And because there's fat loss coaches, right? Like there are people who advertise for fat loss, and there's also, you know, major companies who advertise for major fat loss and will just drive people into really hardcore diets. And even though they'll lose the weight fairly quickly, you know, there really isn't at least like an intention for sustaining those results. And I think getting away from trying to rush the process and rather just simply enjoying the changes, the subtle changes that are gradually going to happen, which is simply being healthier, I think those things are really, really important. But the only issue is that it's not sexy, nor is it, you know, very marketable. You know, how do you market something that, hey, you know, I know this company is going to get you results in 30 days, but we'll get you results in maybe 6 months, you know, 3 months, 6 months, depending on where you're at. It could also take a year potentially, depending on your history. But the good news is that you'll be able to keep those results, you know, by the end of it all. I mean, that's like, well, shit, I'm going to go with the 30 days. Like, I don't want to wait for it. So it's kind of hard. And I think that's a challenge, because there is, at least from, you know, what I'm seeing, there seems to be a shift in perspective with, you know, seeing that the hormones do matter and seeing that gut health matters and these other internal factors that were once not sexy at all are starting to matter. But, you know, to the degree of it making an actual change, I don't know how far along we are, but it's ironic, unfortunately.
This is why I freaking love you guys so much as well, because you can tell that we are honestly the coaches who care. Like, we get so heartbroken when we see people struggling with the same things over and over again. And we will touch base on, like, not really babysitting, enabling. Like, we will talk about that a little bit more in terms of how you can get your best results in a way that you can sustain them. But going off that as well, it's the unrealistic expectations that people put on themselves, especially when they try to get this leanness. It's like people don't even know what a realistic level of body fat is anymore. They're too busy hyper-focusing on every single jiggly part on their body or every single thing that moves that doesn't look like muscle, wanting to get off every little inch and cranny on their body without realizing that that isn't actually realistic. And not everyone looks as shredded as what they look like on stage, because now there's so many people jumping to friggin' photo shoots and comp preps in ways that aren't sustainable anyway, especially when where you're starting from is so far from that, and you have to do something drastic to get there. That's for a one day thing. You don't maintain a one day body for life. And also with that, how when people hear it takes a year or it takes months, it just seems too long, yet they're willing to jump to like this 12-week thing only to find themselves back at the start again.
Yeah. I mean, that if you take the amount of times that you have jumped in and out of diets and you add all of those up, how long is that? Honestly, probably years, maybe even decades, because I've talked to a person on a consult call who started her first diet when she was 10 years old, 10, and she was 34. So that's like 2 decades worth of dieting, but a year's too long to dedicate to your goals. It's such a hard thing, because people can often become frustrated with us as coaches because we're not willing to do things with shortcuts or do things quickly. I even just talked about on my story because this is the first time that I'm entering into a fat loss phase in 2 years. And that's been really challenging from a mental standpoint. I'm not going to pretend that it hasn't been, but it has been very, very challenging to not want to do that. And to have to actually put on weight in order to get myself to a place where I can lose weight. But I put on my story today that, hey, if you want to follow along, you definitely can. I'm going to be kind of keeping track of all of this. The thing is that it's not going to be fast and it's definitely not going to be exciting. And I think that people need to understand that fast doesn't mean good, and that the faster you lose weight, the faster you'll rebound. So you kind of have to sit back and ask yourself, like, if you were to add up the amount of times that you dieted and then rebounded and had to continue that cycle, how long is that? And that can really kind of put in perspective for you how long you've actually been trying to reach your results instead of just spending X amount of time to actually do things that are going to not only give you the results you want, but build a lifestyle around it so that you never have to diet again in a way that is unsustainable. And obviously, like, we're very passionate about this, and it's hard because essentially I think the best thing that you can do, and the clients that tend to be most successful who come to us, is that you kind of have to just let go and forget everything that you've ever heard and just trust that your coach has your best interest at heart. Because if you go in and you're like, well, this worked for me, you know, a year ago, or this person said this, or I'm on TikTok and this person said this, you're not going to get anywhere. You're really not. So it's important that, like, the difference between those that succeed with us and those that do not are the ones that are truly surrendering to that process and kind of just like letting your coach do their job. There are crappy coaches out there, but if you find a good coach and they're taking the time and taking care of your health, and I understand that it can be frustrating because it's taking a little bit longer, but if you can surrender to that process and give in to letting go of constantly needing an outcome, it will make it so much more enjoyable for you when you actually are at a place where you're happy, you're healthy, you feel good, you look good, and all of those things eventually come together.
It's funny, before you even mentioned the coach part, I wrote a note. The real results don't come with exciting measures. It's boring consistency. And a coach's job is to sit through the bullshit to stop you doing the dumb shit.
Yeah.
Yep. Exactly.
Like, people think they need to change their macros every odd week, or people think they need the most exciting training program, when, or even the fact that something that I've been seeing a lot more recently, and I do wonder where people hear this stupid advice, is when, like, every 2 weeks you should be changing your program because otherwise your body isn't going to adapt and get results. Or when you stop, like, when you start to see a plateau, that's when everything needs to be changed up, because then you're not going to get results anymore. But we know that it's as soon as you start to see a plateau that that's when results are only just starting to happen, because now you can actually start to force more change, and change doesn't come without that force. Take that one away, Kenny.
Well, it's funny, like, this is, and I want to touch on, like, the social media aspect, because Ruby, both you and Sarah made a good point, and this is where it gets really kind of screwed up, is that there's this desire from a creator perspective, right? Like, most of fitness media is on social media. That's going to be on TikTok, Instagram, whatever, or YouTube. And one of the main, you know, methods to getting views and to grow your account is to basically make clickable titles. So for people, like, change your workouts every 2 weeks, like, that is absolutely marketable. It's like, oh crap, I need to change my workouts every 2 weeks. I better follow this person and, you know, better take notes, because there's a lot of variety. And also, you know, just to touch upon this as well, where if you have too many chefs in the wheelhouse, it can be very, very confusing. And just know too, if you happen to compare yourself to another individual, like Ruby had mentioned, people wanting to get on stage, you know, do a bodybuilding show of some sort. And this is part of the dark side, I guess you want to call it, of fitness is that, especially in the competitive world, you know, a lot of individuals will use certain enhancements to make themselves look a certain way. And unfortunately, you know, one of the, I guess you can say one of the things that gets pushed out quite a bit from a social media perspective are people who happen to be enhanced. And for someone who's new to the gym and maybe, you know, realize this, and they're just legitimately trying to get healthier, stronger, leaner as a natural individual, it may be discouraging, right? And just know too, you know, I have nothing against people doing those things, but it's more so about the knowing of whether, you know, like if you're promoting a certain way of doing something and you happen to be on something, but you're not letting your audience know, then that's when it becomes deceptive. And when it comes down to, you know, the gym and doing the quote unquote boring things, you know, your movements don't have to change at all whatsoever, as long as you have good, solid movements. And what I mean by that is movements that that are compound movements, such as like an RDL, a barbell row, a squat, and just know like there's many different variations of these certain exercises. But what can change is how you perform the exercise. So for example, maybe you do a different tempo, the pace at which you lower the bar or lower the dumbbell versus the pace at which you, you know, contract your muscle, or perhaps you add a few pauses. Another way you can change things up is rest times. You can maybe have a longer rest period to maximize strength, or you can do a shorter rest period to maximize metabolic output. So there's a lot of things that can change about the workout, but it's not necessarily the movement in itself. Because ultimately what you want to do is you want to make sure that you get better at these movements and become a so-called quote-unquote master of your own body. Because the more you practice these movements, the better you get at it. And the better you get at it, the more load you're able to basically lift. And the more load you're basically able to lift, the more strength you're going to get, the more hypertrophy you're able to potentially have, given that your recovery is good and given that your intensity is good. And, you know, speaking of intensity and intent, you know, intensity is going to be, at least in my opinion, defined as to how far are you actually pushing yourself. So, for example, rep ranges. People get caught about rep ranges all the time. You know, the lower you go, the more strength, I guess, adaptations you can get. And the higher you go, the more metabolic adaptations you can get. When I say metabolic, I mean like muscular endurance, that sort of thing. But just know that this rep range of 8 to 12, like for most people, this is actually a pretty good rep range. And the rep ranges in and of themselves aren't necessarily magical, but it's more so about how you're performing the reps within those rep ranges. So for example, the quality of your movement is going to matter way more than your rep ranges. Like if you're practicing proper form, if you're actually slowly, and when I say slowly, I mean in control, like you're able to control the movement. A lot of people will just sling the weights, let them drop to the floor. Like you don't want to do that. You want to have some control over the weight. And also, you know, are you practicing explosive concentrics or explosive contractions? These are ways that you can actually emphasize strength. This is ways that you can emphasize muscle growth and also tendon strength. So there's a lot of things that you can change, but the movements in and of themselves, you don't really have to change. And people who are telling you to quote unquote confuse your muscles and, you know, change up your workouts, like these people are either one, they don't know what they're doing, or two, they're blatantly lying to you to get some more views or clicks. And I mean, that's a pretty bold statement, but I you know, it's pretty insane to see what social media has to offer sometimes. And most of it, unfortunately, is for pure entertainment value, which is unfortunate, because if you are to look at, you know, these, and I say bodybuilders, because bodybuilders are people who have achieved incredible amounts of not just strength, but incredible amounts of muscle building, right? These are individuals who have mastered hypertrophy, whether or not they're using drugs, right? It doesn't matter. Their methods are maximizing their potential. And if you were to look at these individuals, most of the time their movements are not changing at all. Like they're doing the same thing all the time. And it can be very boring. You know, it can be, it's like, whoa, this guy has done barbell rows for how many years now? Like he hasn't changed it. Like, what is that? But it's, I mean, it's really most of the time it's, it looks or appears boring, but the fun, at least for me, comes with knowing why you're doing it. Like if you don't know why you're doing something, then it's probably not going to be fun. But if you understand the reason for the boringness, whatever you want to call it, it all of a sudden it can become very invigorating. It can become very motivating. And I think, I think a lot of people get confused about that because Weider, I know I'm talking a lot here, but like Joe Weider, who is Arnold Schwarzenegger or who was Arnold Schwarzenegger's mentor and really kind of the father or godfather of the golden era, he had a set of principles that were kind of laid out for these 70s bodybuilders. And one of the principles, I think it was principle 11 or 9, was muscle confusion. And the whole concept of muscle confusion wasn't necessarily to, you know, literally confuse the muscles by changing your workouts or shock the muscle, right, as Arnold puts it, but rather it was a way to mentally become more invigorated with your workouts. Because if you look at Arnold and the way he said shock the muscle, he was referring to training the failure. He was referring to training with super high intensity. And it wasn't about like, oh, I'm gonna, you know, I did barbell rows yesterday, so I'm gonna do, you know, pull downs today, like to shock the muscle. Like that's not what he's saying. What he's saying is that these are two movements that can build the back, but the shocking principle is about the intensity and the intent behind it. And Joe Weider was simply providing a different idea as to how you can mentally invigorate yourself, because mentally, if you're willing to go somewhere, then your body's going to follow. And training to failure is very, very hard. Building muscle is very, very hard. So it's something that you need to learn how to do.
I would also say that back then, there wasn't really that much education around how progress actually happens. So of course he's going to throw it out like that, because it, like, you do the best that you can until you know better. And now that we know better, we don't go by those outdated principles anymore. But something that you said, which I loved as well, is when it comes to the intensity you put behind something. Actually, no, it was when you said why you're doing something. If you don't know why you're doing something, well, you bloody know well your why. It's just that you get lost in the instant gratification, the wanting results now, the chasing numbers all the time. If it's not chasing numbers on the scale, you're chasing numbers in the gym. And if you're going to get warped up in just wanting more, 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 thinking that progress is linear, that you're always going to increase your weight every single week, which you're not. You're lucky to even increase it every single fortnight, especially for upper body as a female. I said this before as well, because you can only realistically lift so much with your upper body. We have weak upper bodies, and especially the delts. If you're trying to go up from like pounds, kilos, whatever, but if you're trying to increase one every single week, very soon you're not going to be taxing the side delt anymore. You're going to be using your whole body movements. You're going to be using your chest, your back, your freaking legs, because you're going to be bouncing up and down like some pogo stick. Your why, you know what you want. You know that it's a body goal. You know that you want to look good. Load is only one tool in the toolbox. And chasing strength doesn't automatically equate to looking good in a certain way. Like there are plenty of strong people out there that either have so much body fat on them or are lean as a fiddle because they're not training for the goal of developing a jacked physique, like a sculpted physique. Your wants and your actions aren't aligned because you don't know what it takes to get to your goal. And like you mentioned with like the rep range, 8 to 12, you can gain muscle at like 20 or you can gain muscle at 25, but most of you weren't doing that because you're going to mentally tap out before you physically take your muscles close to failure if you go beyond 12 to 15. And how you perform them, like a lot of people, I like this part that you mentioned. If you see me train, if you see Sarah train, if you see Kenny train, you will see us doing a lot of the same meat and potato exercises, but it almost goes over people's head when they see us do that stuff because they're too busy looking for the cool shit that they can poke an eye at. It's like the stuff that you're so used to seeing is just like the back of your hand. You don't think twice about it. But that's the reason why we get better at it. And then if you see me, like when I came back to doing deadlifts again, because you know that I tore my hamstring, when I came back to doing deadlifts again, and you can see me with like digit deadlifts, how did you get, like, people expect to just increase their strength as fast as I did. Like, bro, I was deadlifting like double what I'm deadlifting now. So of course I'm going to get my strength back that fast because I've done it before. Don't compare where you are and your progress to someone else because you don't know jack shit about them half the time.
Exactly. I mean, it's funny. I used to do the same thing where I would go on social media and I would compare my back. There was to this day, I would be hesitant to post my stories, my workouts on my stories on Instagram because it was literally the same thing every week. I was like, this is be boring. Like I'm literally doing the same thing every day. And it's funny because I enjoy it, but to advertise it, it's like, oh, there goes Kenny. He's doing RDLs again. Or there goes Kenny. He's doing, you know, bicep curls again. Like, wasn't he doing this for like weeks? It's like, yeah, I have been doing this for weeks, but I'm getting better at them. And it's funny. You can't really compare your progress to someone else's. And I think going back to like the why, I think at a surface level, you do understand that you go to the gym, you're going to get results like that. That's why you're going, right? But to understand the deeper why, like why should you change your workouts so frequently? I think that tends to be missing.
Just remind me of something I wanted to say because it was part of that question thing. When people think that just because you're slowly plateauing now, that you need to change your program to see results, that is the purpose of resistance training, to actually adapt to that exercise. And your body is going to get sore. It's going to improve a lot quicker at the beginning because you're learning how to fire neurons in the right sequence, how to recruit the muscle fibers that are needed, because some might not be firing until you actually get the body used to performing that movement. You might be unstable at first, and then you start to get some stability, you start to get some control, and then through repetition, you get better, and then you keep increasing to a certain point. Now that you got to that point, you need to fight for every single little bit of progress from there, and that is where your muscles start to change. But that is also where most people go to a new program because it's been 6 weeks now. We need to change it up. And then they just come out with a friggin' wig and paint their skin another color so that it just looks like a completely different thing. Like nothing looks the same.
Yeah, it's funny. And Sarah, if you want to touch upon this as well, you know, with programming, period, and I can never pronounce this. Periodization. Yes, thank you. I think that's very, very important. And you know, looking at the example of your actual exercises, right? You know, obviously, if you have like a spine loading exercise and you've been doing it for weeks and you've been lifting heavy, then maybe yes, you know, you'll probably take that away and give yourself a break. But for the most part, you know, when we're talking about those rep ranges, right, and going from very low rep ranges to, say, higher rep ranges, and then also talking about, like, rest times, where we have very long rest times for maximizing hypertrophy, right? Like, you get a greater chance at trying to get closer to failure, right, with a larger load. But for someone who has been hammering themselves, like to no end, where like Ruby had mentioned, where you're, you know, fighting for that last, you know, rep and fighting for that just little bit of progress, right? At some point, at least in my opinion, I think it is important to kind of focus on different energy systems where, for example, if we look at hypertrophy focused training, right, versus say something that's more metabolic training, and the way we program, there's something called local lactic, which is basically, So for those that are listening, so local lactic, it's a form of training where basically you have shorter rest times, and it's usually done in a superset fashion, and you're basically pairing certain muscle groups together, and you're creating this basically a large pump, but the pump is this accumulation of what's known as lactate, and the lactate is basically a waste product, and the waste product will be filtered to your liver. The liver is going to metabolize it. It's going to be under stress, and because of that, it's going to actually make you healthier. It's going to make your liver healthier. And a way you can, say, get over a plateau, let's say you're plateauing at, you know, a certain level, whether it's strength or hypertrophy, whatever it may be, and you're really stressed out, you can switch over to a different stimulus. You can have the same exercises, but the way you're doing the exercises can change the entire adaptation, and you can have better recovery. And with that better recovery, you can eventually go back into just going, you know, full, just going crazy with your workouts. And next thing you know, you get past that plateau. So there's different ways to train, but when you do change your program, it should be done so with an intention to maybe better your health or maybe better your systems, as opposed to, I'm bored as hell, I'm going to change this and let's hope for the best. You know, like that shouldn't be the case, at least in my opinion.
I want to do a bridging to then pass this over to Sarah to relate this to dieting, because I just made a really good bridging between this. And the way that you were saying that is why it's so important to not just keep chasing progress in one direction, because you can't just keep getting stronger to know its end, because otherwise you'd be literally lifting houses and trucking cars. Different forms of stress on the body all have a role in where you want to go, and you tax different energy systems. That's where strength, that's where like the lower reps, but like just focusing on getting stronger, focusing on getting a metabolic stimulus. They are all different stress systems that will deload your body in other ways. Like you won't be so neurologically or brain taxed from chasing just heavier loads. Now you can create that in a different way. But this is why periodization is so important. And then we can see that, like we can actually see that, because there's no emotions tied to it. But as soon as it comes to dieting and the fact that you need to periodize your dieting, the fact that you can't be in a foul space forever, the fact that you can't chase a lower number on the scale forever, all of a sudden emotions win over and periodization doesn't exist anymore. And the idea that you can't keep doing the same diet that you did to lose the fat as you do to maintain it just baffles a lot of people's mind, because it's like, as soon as I eat more, I'm going to gain weight. Well, no, you're not meant to do the same shit that you did to lose the weight that you do to keep it off. So that's a perfect transition for you.
Yeah, that's a really heavy topic for a lot of people. I think a big issue, let's start with fat loss phases in general, or when people are trying to lose weight, oftentimes they will set themselves, and for some reason, and I still don't know why, the most popular number is 1,200 calories. Let me just say that if you're putting yourself inside of a box of eating 1,200 calories because that's what you heard, everyone's body is different. Everyone's like capacity to handle calories and how they handle calories is going to be different. But I will say the biggest thing is that jumping to 1,200 calories is not the answer. It's not a magic number. It's not going to deliver the results you're looking for. But a lot of times with dieting is that people just, they slash their calories super, super low, and then they stay there for weeks on end. And this is what sets you up for pretty much starting a metabolic adaptation very quickly. So this is why you end up plateauing. This is why you're eating super low calories for weeks on end. And then all of a sudden you're not losing weight anymore. And in some cases, some extreme cases, you actually start gaining weight on the calories that you once were losing weight on, because you are metabolically adapting to those calories. And this is why the periodization of not only training, but the periodization of your your diet also matters. This is where diet breaks come in. This is where refeeds come in. This is where untracked meals might come in to give you that metabolic bump. And you know, what happens is like when people are spending, you know, weeks on end eating super low calories and then not implementing anything to, you know, upregulate your thyroid or your sex hormones, or you bring down your cortisol levels, you end up in this perfect storm to just create just weight loss resistance or that metabolic adaptation. And I think people are always afraid to feed themselves up thinking that that's not, you know, I'm dieting, why would I eat more? Why would I implement more carbs, or why would I increase my calories? So things like refeed, that's what I would consider like the periodization of your nutrition when it comes to a fat loss phase. Is you don't always want to just have straight calories and just sticking to those. The refeeds, like I said, will upregulate your thyroid. Refeeds are meant to be mostly carbohydrates. So if you're in a dieting phase, this is meant to upregulate your thyroid, which is the master of your metabolism. So you don't run into that wall and that plateau, and you're able to extend your fat loss phase in a much healthier manner versus just digging yourself into a hole trying to eat low calories where you shouldn't be in the first place. 1200 calories is not a magic number. This is why it's also important to put yourself into a maintenance phase so that you are at a higher set point from a calorie perspective. So you're not cutting and you're not trying to lose weight on extremely low calories. And this is why it takes so much time when you're doing things, when you're accounting for your health and also accounting for the fact that you want to keep results that you get. Not to say that you're going to stay at a super low body fat percentage all the time, but at least you are able to maintain your muscle tissue and change the way that your body looks overall. A big thing that I kind of like to say is that your goal weight and your goal body, they're not the same thing. Like, they are not the same thing. I will tell you that I had a goal weight of hitting 104 pounds. That was my goal weight. I was like, if I hit this, I will be happy. I will be so confident in my body. And let me tell you, I got down to 102 and I was like, this is terrible. I hate this. I have no muscle. I still have so much fat. And I think that's where the term skinny fat comes from. And when I got my goal body, I was at 120 pounds, like vast difference. So that's also a common misconception, is you're trying to lose weight on low calories, but losing weight and losing fat are not the same thing. If you want to have that, I hate using this word, but if you want to have that toned look, it's basically building muscle and revealing that muscle underneath body fat. You're not losing weight. Your weight might not even change when you go through, you know, a fat loss version, when you first start losing body fat. The goal is to get your body to respond on the least amount of stimulus, and that goes for your dieting too. So if you can lose weight on higher calories or lose body fat on higher calories, why wouldn't you want to do that? So like I said, implementing things like refeeds and doing the periodization of your nutrition, diet breaks, this sounds like a crazy concept to go through. And what refeeds and what diet breaks are is just a period of overfeeding and increasing your calories and bringing them up to your perceived maintenance for like a couple days or maybe a week to give your body a break and bring your cortisol levels down, upregulate your thyroid. That it's going to allow you to lose more body fat, hold on to your muscle tissue more efficiently through a fat loss phase. So that's my two cents on the dieting aspect with the periodization of that.
I'm going to throw something back at you, but at the same time, I don't know where this more came from. Like, why would you not want to get the most results you can out of doing the least? Like, you have a lot.
And that is part one of the podcast with the Liptons. Part two will be coming next week. If you liked the episode, it would be so, so amazingly, amazingly kind of you if you could click through to my podcast and give me a 5-star rating. It would mean the world to me. And reach out to us if there's anything you want to ask. We are open and we chat and we do care about people getting results. So I'll leave you with that.